Shabbat Shalom, and Shabbat Shalom to everybody that is with us tonight. Pull up a chair, and let's study the word of Yahweh. Here we are. It is December 26th on the Roman calendar. It is the last Erev Shabbat study for the Roman calendar year, at least anyway. And I thought that tonight I would just go over world news and kind of a review of the year 2025 and a little speculation on where we are going in 2026. And wow, it's hard to imagine. These years are going by so fast. And I remember it seemed like it was just a day ago I was saying, I can't believe it's 2025. And now, I can't believe it's going to be 2026. So it feels like the years are going by. What used to be like what would be a month seems to be like a year now, how fast that time is going by. So I've been saying this for a while. I really feel the world has changed since COVID. I think that COVID was a big dividing marker. I also believe that the October 7th war with Israel also was a marker, and Israel changing their strategy and their tactics some. And I want to talk about some of that tonight as we're getting into what's coming up here for 2026. Because I really feel the world is at a turning point. And we had a lot of big things happening in 25. The war, you know, the war with Israel going on with so many different factions, with not only Hamas in Islamic Jihad in the land, but also with Hezbollah, with Iran, with the Houthis in Yemen. And it just seems to go on and on and on. And I was sharing this before how I've never seen the people in Israel the way they are now. You know, when you're a country like Israel and you're this small country about the size of New Jersey that one nuclear bomb can basically end your country, you know, and you're going through wars continuously since they became a nation in 1948, you kind of have to have a positive outlook. If you don't, you won't survive there. Israel is the hardest place on the world to live in. And we lived there for 20 years, you know, with the work of Yahweh. And I could tell you firsthand, it was not easy living there for many, many, many different reasons. But it is an extremely tough place to live. And being back now recently, I, you know, in one way, things are the same as far as things look the same, you know, that not a whole lot has changed, except if you get into the cities. If you get into Tel Aviv and Jerusalem, they're doing all kinds of construction everywhere, trying to make them into almost like neon, like these new age cities that they're building there. But I'm saying as far as the place itself, going to the biblical places, what a blessing that was. Yahweh gave us our own private tour. Every single place we went to, there was not a soul there. So it was really, really nice to, you know, not only the city of David, but so many different things in the north, the Sea of Galilee, you know, Jerusalem, different places. And every place we were the only people that was there because of the situation. It's like a ghost town. And even in Jerusalem, one thing that we noticed was, not only is, I mean, it looks like maybe 20% of the people that were there before. I know at feast time, if anybody's been with us in Jerusalem for the feast, it is jam-packed. I mean, you can't even walk. But that's the feast. You know, we lived there. We lived in Jerusalem. We lived in Israel. So we were there all different times of the year, not only at feast time. And Jerusalem pretty much was crowded, you know, for the most part. But now it seemed like not only wasn't it crowded, and like I said, it seemed like maybe 20% of the people. It almost was like being in a ghost town. But the other thing was most of them were religious, and most of them were speaking English, which is really, really odd. You know, they seem to be Americans, you know, American Jews. And, you know, you hear them on the phone, you're in that. That wasn't like that before. A matter of fact, many of the Jews that I met in Jerusalem, not only did they only speak Hebrew, they didn't even know English, a lot of them. You know, particularly some of the rabbis and different people there. So something really, really strange is happening. I'm not really sure how to what to make of that part of it. But things are changing. And I want to start in Joel, the book of Joel, chapter 3 and verse 11. And basically, like I said, I want to go over things that happened in 2025, what possibly could be coming in 2026, and really going over the war situation in Israel and World War. And I don't, you know, I've been saying for several years now, World War is coming because it says it in the Bible. I haven't talked much about will the situation in Israel trigger World War, you know, because they don't seem to be related until recently. Now they do seem to be related because all the world is coming against Israel. So because of what's going on in Gaza and different things. So we'll talk some about that. The natural disasters in 2025, there were a lot of really bad natural disasters. And one of the strange things were the amount of fires that happened all over the earth. I mean, in the United States, they had those horrible, horrible fires in California. Some of the worst, I think, that have ever been on record, you know, there. In Europe, there were fires in all different places, you know, and the Middle East, including Israel. There was a lot of bad fires near Jerusalem, in different places. Greece, in different places in Europe that also had a lot of fires. And, you know, all different places. Even India, they had some really, really bad fires that were over there. So a lot of bad natural disasters that happened. I want to talk some about the rise of AI and the digital ID that is moving really, really, really fast. The loss of morals and values. Wow, that just seems to be tanking. And then pretty much just finish up with the possible financial crisis that might be coming by next spring to summer. So I'll go over it as I go over these articles. We'll hit on it. I'm really not going in any kind of particular order here, but this is basically what I want to cover. But Joel 3 and verse 11 says, beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. So we know, you know, from Isaiah, right, they're going to be beating their swords into plowshares in the millennium and their spears into pruning hooks. But here, this is saying in the time we're living in now, you know, verse 9, proclaim this among the nations, sanctify a war, awaken the mighty men, let all the men of war draw near, let them come up. So you're not going to have peace until the Prince of Peace comes. We do know there's a false peace with Israel in the end time. And, we're seeing things set up that, you know, you don't have to use too much of your imagination when you're looking at what's happening in the world today to see that that false peace is being played out and will be played out, you know, in the days and months ahead. But over here, this is talking about war. It says, beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am strong. Gather yourself and come, all you nations, and gather yourself together all around, O Yahweh. Bring down your mighty ones. So, in continuing here, let the nations be awakened and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat, that's the Kidron Valley in Jerusalem. For there I will sit to judge all the nations all around. Put in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come, go down, for the press is full, the vats overflow, for their wickedness is great. Multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision, for the day of Yahweh is near in the valley of decision. And I believe that's where we kind of are now, the world. You know, I think Yahweh's people was in this valley of decision a couple of years ago. And the sad part is, for Yahweh's people, the valley of decision, I think, is pretty much over. And yet there's people that are so blind, they didn't even see it. And they're still in that valley of decision, not even knowing they're in that valley of decision. But that's the point. Like they say, no decision is a decision. And people that over the last few years have been being warned, they're seeing things. Yahweh has been showing prophecies, you know, all the doors that he's opened up in Jordan and Selah and all the things. I mean, it is absolutely amazing. And if that doesn't build your faith, to see the Bible come alive and to see Yahweh doing things that he says in the Bible without anyone trying to force it whatsoever. And I know years ago, you know, when we still lived in the States, even going back in the 1980s, the 1990s, you know, I'd see where something would happen and people a lot of times would try to fit it into prophecy some way when a lot of times it wasn't. And when I got to Israel, the first thing I realized is you don't have to try to fit things into prophecy because they just happened. Yahweh makes them happen because that's his place, the Middle East and Israel. And of course, like I said, they call the land of Jordan, but that's also the land of Israel, the biblical land, at least a part of it. And we're seeing that. We've been seeing Yahweh's hand in the things that he's been doing. And the day of Yahweh is vastly approaching. And unfortunately, like I said, a lot of people have had their heads in the sand and they don't even see it. So, but the world now, and you know, another thing that I've always said, you know, whatever happens to the world happens to the congregation first. And I think now the world is going into that valley of decision, you know, that there's people are going to have to make decisions. I think it's one of the reasons why this big open door that Yahweh has given us, which is absolutely amazing, you know, and just week after week after week, I continuously get people contacting me from everywhere, from Asia to Europe to United States, even going all over Africa, you know, people that want to join this work. And it's really been hard to keep up with it, but I don't know if I've ever seen a time in my life where the people are just reading the lessons and reading the truth and coming to faith. It's like you don't even have to try to convince them because the Holy Spirit is coming and doing that. So we're in that time, you know, and we're in that time in the world, and we have the short window of opportunity, I said it, for witnessing. Only Yahweh knows how long that will be. You know, will it be just a matter of months or will it be a few years? He knows, we don't, and that's why we can't take this lightly. We have to work hard while it's here because the harvest time we know is ready. And we know the workers are few. And even like it says here in verse 13, put in the sickle for the harvest is ripe. You know, the press is full, the vats overflow there. And the wickedness of the world is great. The world gets more wicked every year that goes on. And wow, it's shocking how fast things go, but it's also shocking the direction how things are going, the technology. If people can't see now, you know, the book of Daniel coming alive, and people will be running to and fro and knowledge will be increased. And there's technology that you would have never thought of in a million years. Like things that you would have thought was science fiction and, you know, made up as a kid, you know, you're playing these games. And now they have this technology and the technology is true. So, like I said, I'm going to go into these articles and I'm going to be hitting on these different points that I said I wanted to mention, you know, on Israel and the war. That's the main one I want to talk about, but also somewhat about the rise of AI and the digital ID, the loss of morals, you know, and the financial crisis. That'll be just the last thing that I'll hit on for just a short time. But the wars and rumors of wars. So here's an article from Syria's Shara, that's that new leader that took over for in Syria a few months back from and it says he slams Israel for exporting conflict to region to hide Gaza massacres. So now this guy there, this Shara, was an ISIS member, you know, supposedly he's had a change of heart in this. Now when he came in, he didn't come in with usually the rhetoric that they come in with where we're gonna destroy Israel and all this. And he came to power just as Israel's in the middle of a war with just about all their neighbors on the side. And yet when he came in, he actually said the opposite. He said, we want peace with our regional neighbors. We want peace with Israel. Now, again, can you trust it? No, not until you see it, and especially a guy like this. But at least he was saying the right things. Since that time, he's been to Washington. He's made deals with President Trump. Who knows where this is going? But now, because of Israel's attacking of Syria, you know, they have been attacking there and doing different things in Syria. There have been Syrians that have been killed. Now he's starting to talk more, and he's saying, Ahmed al-Shara on Saturday accused Israel of exporting crises to other countries around the region in order to distract from its horrifying massacres in Gaza. And there's still strikes in the Gaza Strip almost every day, and people still dying. And the outcry in the world and the protest, they just seem to be getting bigger and bigger. I mean, when you can go to places like Australia and Great Britain and you can get 100,000 people protesting about something going on in Gaza, that's pretty shocking there. And he says, since we arrived in Damascus, this is Shiraz saying this, we sent positive messages regarding regional peace and stability, and that we are not interested in being a country that exports conflict, including to Israel. Shara continued referring to his jihadist group's toppling of the Assad regime last year. But in return, Israel has met us with extreme violence, Shara said, highlighting the deadly Israeli raid on terrorists in the southern Syrian town of Bet Jin last month. Syria has suffered massive violations of our airspace, and we've been victim of over 1,000 airstrikes and over 400 incursions. Shara reiterated his call for Israel to withdraw from the Golan territories, the Golan Heights that Israel took over, the Syrian part, last year. In southern Syria, that it is occupied since December, last December, after Assad fled, with Jerusalem wary of the new Syrian leader's past and an al-Qaeda commander, inciting fears that the area would fall into the wrong hands. So, you know, we see that. And the interesting part, which I've mentioned before, and again, why would I trust somebody who was a ISIS commander before? But again, I don't know. I don't know the man. I don't know his intentions. But I do know that it is strategically smart that Syria has made a pact with Turkey. We talked about that. And that's going to be really, I believe, the big problem that's going to come up for Israel if they wind up going to war with Turkey. And there's been a lot of rhetoric from Turkey. There's a lot of rhetoric from Israel. But at this point, it's only talk. But we will see. That could be something that is could come up in the future. They certainly are not allies like they were just, you know, about a decade ago, where Turkey was one of the friendliest countries to Israel until Erdogan took over, and all that changed after that. So, but what's happening now, although the a war with Turkey is always something that they have to think about, that's not probably the highest priority on the list right now. But being in Israel, and this is another thing that just amazed me, because like I said, usually at this point, you know, because even when I'm looking on websites and they're still talking about a day, let me see if they even have it, they tell you what day of the war it is, day 800 or something like that. Yeah, Israel war day 812. And I was wondering, because, you know, once they got that ceasefire with Hamas, and like I said, it's not a peace plan, you know, it's a basic temporary cessation of violence. But usually when that happens, it usually does stick for a while, you know. And again, Israel's going, they've been doing some bombing, Hamas has attacked some soldiers, but basically it seems like the war itself is pretty much over. You know, Hamas is greatly weakened, you know, and in a bad way. And the same with Hezbollah. You know, Israel is, I got some articles here, they're going up there every week, you know, and doing more attacks up there. And you're really not seeing Hezbollah counter that whatsoever. We're hitting the point here where just in a few days, by January 1, Hezbollah is supposed to be disarmed. Good luck with that, you know, by the Lebanese army. Now they're saying, is it only going to be to the Litani River, you know, in southern Lebanon or not? But they are weakened. There's no doubt about that. Hezbollah is greatly weakened, you know, and with them not really hitting back at Israel when they're hitting them, nobody knows really what their capabilities are at this point. And the same with Iran. Iran did a lot of damage. I'm going to read it here in one of these articles. But Iran was damaged quite a bit also. And where at the time, you know, President Trump was saying they decimated their nuclear program, and I was saying that wasn't true. I gave a lot of evidence showing that it wasn't true. It got hit. The Fordo plant and some of the other plants got hit pretty hard, but it was not decimated. And all of a sudden now, Israel is saying that they're looking to go back into Iran again in the near future. So the people, I know people in the military in Israel, I know people in the politics over there, and I know everyday people that just serve in, as soldiers and whatnot. And every single person told me the same thing, which shocked me. Everybody said it's not over yet. You know, even people that I hadn't seen for a while, and they weren't sure if I was still bringing groups. And usually they're always like, yeah, bring your group, bring your group. They were like, I would hold off bringing any groups here right now. And there were no groups there. There was nobody there. But it seems not that Israel's going to be attacked, because, like I said, Hezbollah and Iran and Hamas, they're not in any kind of position to do any attacking. They've been really hit pretty hard. But it seems that Israel is looking to up the ante in this. So I'm going to read this article here that says, Netanyahu to present Trump with new Iran attack plans during U.S. visit. So this is going to be, President Trump has not even been in there 1 year. This is going on 11 months that he's been in there. And next week will be the fifth visit of Prime Minister Netanyahu. No president has ever met with the Israeli Prime Minister five times during his term, never mind five times in the first year. And unfortunately, every time they get together, it's not good. It's almost like President Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu is like the lighter fluid in the match. You know, that when those two get together, you just got all this crazy stuff coming out of these meetings and more stuff about war and, you know, building Gaza up, as, you know, I got another article here on that, into, you know, like the new Las Vegas and all this other different stuff. So it says, Jerusalem is concerned Tehran could rebuild its nuclear program, but is primarily worried about a potential surge in ballistic missile production to some 3,000 a month. And I had that article from a couple weeks ago where Iran was saying that they've developed, I even saw a short video on it, they developed new ballistic missiles that are supposed to be much better. And from all the intelligence that I saw in the war that happened in the summer in June, that to be honest, Iran really didn't want the war at that time. Iran is pretty strategically smart. They're evil, you know, they are evil, the leaders there, but they are pretty strategically smart. And they only want to fight if they know they can win. And I don't believe that they really were at a point, especially with Hezbollah being decimated the way they were, that they were at a point where they really wanted to, where they thought they could defeat Israel at that point. And yet, when you're being attacked and you're being bombed and, you know, there was a 100 nuclear scientists and military leaders and generals that were killed, that Israel killed there, of course you're going to fight back. And they actually hit Israel pretty hard. And thousands of homes were destroyed. You know, even an art center that was really, really important in Israel that was hit. And, you know, they stopped the war after 12 days. It didn't go on that long. But now Israel is planning, it looks like, and that's why Prime Minister Netanyahu is going to be there with President Trump next week to talk President Trump into going at Iran once again. So when President Trump came out and said how they destroyed it, we knew it. We can't believe anything that President Trump says. He lies constantly. And that was not what the evidence was showing. It was showing that, yes, they were hit hard, but they, you know, at the time, they said it would only take them months, you know, maybe up to 6 months to a year to rebuild what was destroyed there. So it says, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will present plans for a possible fresh attack on Iran to U.S. President Donald Trump during his upcoming visit to Washington. According to the report, Israel is growing increasingly concerned that Iran is rebuilding and even expanding its ballistic missile production in the wake of the nation's 12-day war in June. Israel is also worried that Iran is rebuilding its nuclear enrichment program, which was heavily damaged by Israeli and American strikes. Netanyahu and Trump are expected to meet at the U.S. President's Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida at the end of the month. While Israel has publicly called Iran's nuclear program an existential threat, officials quoted in the report said that the ballistic missiles were seen by Jerusalem as a more pressing concern. The nuclear weapons program is very concerning. There's an attempt to reconstitute, but it's not that immediate, source with knowledge of Israel's plans said. The threat of the missile is very real, and we weren't able to prevent them the last time. A source with knowledge on the matter, as well as former U.S. officials, told NBC that Jerusalem believes Iran's renewed production of ballistic missiles could increase to 3,000 per month if left unchecked, so that they could build 3,000 new missiles every single month. In all, Israel has suffered 36 missile impacts, one drone strike in a populated area, causing damage to 2,305 homes and 240 buildings, along with two universities and a hospital, and leaving over 13,000 Israelis displaced. The Washington Post reported this week that Netanyahu and Trump had discussed a potential strike on Iran's nuclear program as early as February during their first meeting after the U.S. president's return to office. Israel and the U.S. coordinated plans throughout the following months, including while Trump held talks with Iran in an effort to resolve the nuclear issue peacefully. So here it is. It seems like, you know, and here it is. This is the last week of 2025. It seems like within the next 2 weeks, Israel is going to go into Lebanon. And, you know, they'll be fighting more with Hezbollah. How long that will take or what they'll be doing is anybody's guess. But that seems like that'll be the first thing on the agenda. And then after that, going into Iran. When they'll go into Iran, it could be anywhere between February and April. But it seems to be before the spring comes that there will be a war. And that's just the intelligence that I've been getting from people I know, the things that I'm reading, and what they're saying. So that's no secret to that, but it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing if Israel and Iran start fighting again. Here's an article that says, Huckabee, Iran didn't get the full message when U.S. bombed its nuclear sites. So to be honest, and I'm no fan of Iran, but I don't see Iran saying anything right now. I see them pretty quiet, which usually that's the way you are when you get beat pretty bad. But I also don't see Iran threatening Israel, you know. I wonder what the plan is for pushing these different war buttons. And, you know, one of the main reasons that President Trump's base wanted him back in there was because throughout all the years, for the last 40 years, Donald Trump has always been against America's wars, their interventionism. Intervening in different countries' affairs, and he was always the one against the war in Iraq, against this. So for him to get in there, and with not even in there a year, and already having attacks with Iran, with Venezuela, with Nigeria now yesterday, threats to take Greenland and Canada. I mean, this is to think of American president literally saying that if they have to, they'll take Greenland and Canada by force. It almost sounds like something you would have heard back in World War II, you know, when these things were happening. So it's a very, very serious situation and a distressing situation, you know, that this kind of stuff is going on. Where it's going to lead to, your guess is as good as mine, but 2026 does not seem any better than 2025 was going to be, and maybe worse. We've been pushing on world war. We have the situation with Russia going on in NATO, and there's a lot of stuff going on with Russia and NATO. Russia does have nuclear capabilities, and we will see. It's a big thing. Now, the one thing that was interesting, because one of the things that a lot of President Trump supporters that have been upset at him have been saying, like, he came in saying America first, and yet he seems to be being pulled by a string by Israel. And it does seem pretty shocking, because in basically since 1948 and Israel becoming a nation again, it was always the other way around. It was basically that Israel was the one that had to get on their hands and knees begging America when they needed help. You know, just like Golda Meir, you know, during the Six-Day War, you know, begging the President of the United States for help in these matters, you know, and whatnot. And it always seemed that way. I know all the time we lived in Israel, it seemed that way. You know, you had Barack Obama, you had George Bush, these different American presidents that did not necessarily seem that they were totally pro-Israel, particularly Barack Obama, who's a Muslim, you know, he certainly wasn't. But now, it almost seems like Israel has something on President Trump, you know, some kind of blackmail or something that he is, you know, overly going. And yet, there's one situation, though, because Israel came out a few weeks ago talking about annexing the West Bank. And boy, the Arab countries came out, and that could be the blow that if they did that, it could go into World War III very, very quickly. Because Saudi Arabia, Egypt, even Turkey, many of these countries said that is going to be the dividing line. If Israel was to annex the West Bank, you know, that could bring on war. And President Trump said, don't even think about it. They're not going to do it. He put cold water on that real, real fast. And yet Israel passed the first reading of a law to annex the West Bank. So will that law pass completely? I don't know. But this article came out. The government now, the government of Israel, announces 19 new West Bank settlements and legalized outposts. So we know that part of the Netanyahu government is very, very right-wing. The guy who's running the police force, Ben-Gvir, and the one who's running the financing, Shmolik, these guys are... I mean, Shmolik was in prison. He was labeled a terrorist not that many years ago. Now he's in the government. And same with Ben-Gvir. They're really, really right-wing, radical people. And they're the ones pushing with this, with the pushing for the West Bank. And we'll see what happens. But if Israel does outrightly annex the West Bank, you're going to have big problems. And we know with President Trump, as much as he could be supporting Israel 100% today, he could turn on him tomorrow, and he said it. He said, don't push him, you know, with that. So we will see what happens, but 11 new settlements that they have named. So that is a big question mark and something to watch, because that's something that really can push war coming. And here, U.S. said to pitch Project Sunrise. Project Sunrise. It's a $112 billion plan to rebuild Gaza as a luxury destination, right? Gaza, President Trump wants it to be the new Las Vegas of the Middle East, you know, and that's all he keeps saying. He's been saying it for years, but now he's really pushing it, getting rid of, you know, what are you going to do with almost 1.5 million Gazans? But I'm sure that's not too much of a problem for him. And it says, a U.S. proposal to rebuild war-torn Gaza into high-tech, luxurious coastal designation over the next two decades has been pitched to possible donor countries, according to report. So this is NEOM. This is NEOM in Israel. The project, which would cost $112 billion over the next 10 years, was developed by a team led by U.S. President Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and Middle East envoy Steve Witkoff over the past 45 days. The Wall Street Journal reported. So, you know, you got this tiny little piece of land there in the Gaza Strip that's been decimated, you know, looks like a war zone. It looks like nuclear bombs were hit there. You have depleted uranium. You have all kinds of stuff. Why on earth would anybody want to do anything there anyway? You know, it's such a messed up place right now, but for some reason they are pushing and that's the place they want. Because it is part of Satan's plan, like the NEOM project, to, you know, where it talks about Assyria and Egypt and Israel, you know, the three of them coming together, and but not the biblical way that they're doing it. So this talks all about this article and everything that they are planning with that. And the foreign minister, Israel Katz, says Israel will resettle North Gaza at appropriate time. So they're saying they are going to stay there. And then another big thing that happened this week, which was interesting, Netanyahu, this happened in Israel. There was a summit. Netanyahu uses summit of Israel, Greece, and Cyprus leaders to send warning to Turkey. So I was mentioning about Turkey, and Turkey is Edom, you know, one of the sons of Edom, O-Teman, you know, the son Teman, which migrated to Turkey, and that's the Turkish part of Edom there. So Turkey and Israel, just like the brothers in the Bible with Esau and Jacob, didn't get along. And we see here that Turkey and Israel are not getting along. So what does Netanyahu do? Netanyahu has this meeting with Greece and Cyprus. Why is Greece and Cyprus important? Because Turkey basically took a third of the island of Cyprus back in 1974. And basically has had that country on edge ever since then, that Turkey might come and just take the whole country over. Why did it happen? Because Greece was threatening to annex Cyprus. So Turkey wound up taking a third of Cyprus, and they've had problems ever since then. So now Netanyahu is thinking strategically the better partnership he has with Greece and Cyprus. And there's a lot of gas, natural gas, that's off the coast of Israel and off the coast of Turkey and off the coast of Cyprus and off the coast of Greece. So that whole area, who is going to do what? And recently, Turkey has actually went in and taken some of Cyprus's gas line. So, again, another thing that could easily trigger war in the region there. It says, Turkey suspended its trade with Israel, said it closed its airspace to Israeli planes, and issued arrest warrants for 37 Israeli officials, including Netanyahu. A close ally of U.S. President Donald Trump, Erdogan has been angling for inclusion in a U.S.-backed international peacekeeping force for Gaza, but Israel has sought to block the idea. So that's the point. Now, once they get this peacekeeping force there, you are going to have a lot of Arab soldiers armed in the Gaza Strip. So I don't know how good that's going to be, but that's what the plan is going. It says Turkey has used its control over part of Cyprus to drill for natural gas in Cypriot waters and has alarmed regional states by pursuing aggressive claims to gas fields across the eastern Mediterranean. Monday's trilateral summit in Jerusalem, the 10th such gathering between the countries, followed reports that Greece, Cyprus, and Israel are exploring the creation of a rapid response military force in the eastern Mediterranean in light of growing concerns in Athens over Turkey's military posture. So although, you know, Israel is a good military might, to be honest, if I was these countries in the region, I'd be very careful making alliances with Israel at this point when you have 500 million Muslims around there that are trying to destroy it. I think people are better off in that sense, in a military sense, staying neutral. It says Israel and Lebanese officials met directly in Lebanon for the second time on Friday as the two enemy states look to maintain the year-old ceasefire in the war with Hezbollah amidst fears that conflict with the Iran-backed terror group could soon erupt again. And why will it erupt? Because Israel's saying they're going to go in there and they're going to attack them. So, and then it says, ahead of a trip to the U.S. to meet Trump, Netanyahu took the opportunity at the joint press conference to confirm reports that Israel is aware Iran has been conducting exercises recently, adding that Tehran's nuclear activities will be discussed with Trump. We are following this and doing all necessary preparations. They're preparing to go in and attack. I want to convey this clearly to Iran. Any action against Israel will be met with a very severe response. Israel reportedly warned the Trump administration that Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps may be using an ongoing military exercise focusing on missiles as cover to launch an attack on Israel and fears that Jerusalem and Tehran are readying for another confrontation. And to be honest, like I said, everything that I'm hearing, everything I'm reading, everything I'm seeing, I am not seeing that Iran is getting ready to attack Israel. I'm seeing it's the other way. That Israel, as a precautionary procedure, is getting ready to attack Iran. So we will see. But this is not something that we're talking to a year or two down the line. We're talking about within a week or two, you know, of going into Lebanon, and within a couple of months of going into attacking Iran again. And like I said, the one thing which is really sad, when I look at Israel and, you know, I see the people there, we have so many friends there, we have, you know, there's a lot of messianic believers there, we have brethren that are there. And it's really sad to see what people have gone through over the last couple of years. But at the same rate, the saddest part is that Israel has caused a lot of this themselves. Instead of when their punishment was ended and Yahweh allowing them back to the land and by a miracle giving the land again, did they make it into a theocracy? Did they use the Torah as their constitution? No, no, they didn't. They wanted to be a democracy. They wanted to be like Babylon. And that's where their problems are coming from. And I do believe that judgment is coming on Israel because they are not obeying the Torah. You know, they are per capita the number one place in the world for abortions. Homosexuality is legal. Prime Minister Netanyahu would praise that, say, yeah, well, look at Israel. We are the only democracy in the Middle East. You know, we allow homosexuals. If they were in the Arab country, they'd be getting killed. And not that I want anybody to get killed, but I also don't believe that in Israel, homosexuality should be legal. It's an abomination. It's a sin in the Bible, and it shouldn't be. But in Ezekiel 5, and this is for end time, he says, "And you, son of man, take to yourself a sharp sword, the razor of a barber. Take it to yourself and make it pass over your head and over your beard. And take for yourself scales to weigh and to divide them out. And you shall burn a third part in the fire in the midst of the city when the days of the siege are fulfilled. And you shall take the third part and beat with the sword all around it. And you shall scatter the third part into the wind, and I will draw out a sword after them. Also you shall take from there a few in number and bind them in your skirts. And take from them again and throw them into the middle of the fire and burn them in the fire. From it shall come forth a fire into all the house of Israel. So says Adonai Yahweh, this is Jerusalem. I have set her in the midst of the nations, and all around her are the lands. And she has changed my judgments for wickedness more than the nations," right? Homosexuality is illegal, you know, in a lot of these countries. Divorce is illegal in a lot of these countries. Abortion is illegal in a lot of these countries, and yet not in Israel. So he says, "She has changed my judgments for wickedness more than the nations, and defiled my Torah more than the lands that are all around her. For they have rejected my judgments and my Torah, they have not walked in them." "Therefore, so says Adonai Yahweh, because you rebelled more than the nations that are all around you, not having walked in my statutes, and not having performed my judgments, and not having done according to the judgments of the nations all around you. Therefore, so says Adonai Yahweh, behold, I, even I, am against you, and will execute judgments in your midst in the sight of the nations. And I will do in you that which I have not done, and which I will not do the like again for all your abominations." So, you know, like I said, sadly, the things that have happened in Israel and the wars that go on and the terrorism, and it's so sad to see it. And the people, they really are worn out. You know, you have in such a small country, tens of thousands of soldiers with PTSD and many, many soldiers trying to commit suicide. Like, they're not made to stay in long-lasting wars like this, and it really has been hard. But again, it's because Yahweh could be on their side. Yahweh would protect them if they were being obedient. Verse 11 says, "Therefore, as I live, says Adonai Yahweh, surely because you have defiled my sanctuary with all your idolatries and with all your abominations, so I also will withdraw, and my eye shall not spare, and I will not have pity." And you know, one thing that I loved living in Israel was at this time of the year, when Christmas would come around, most years, I wouldn't even realize it was Christmas till Christmas Day or even after. It would be like the next day or the day after. And I'm like, oh yeah, yesterday, wasn't yesterday the 25th? Believe it or not, you know, in Israel now, they have Santa Clauses, never mind, you know, pagan Christmas trees and the other stuff that you see like in Jeremiah 10. I mean, they have pagan Santa Clauses all around, and I'm not sure why. Because, I mean, Christmas is it's a pagan day. You know, it's filled with paganism. It's not the birth of Yeshua. And they're not Christians. So why would they even be doing this stuff over there? And like it says, you know, the abominations, the idolatries and the abominations. He says, the third part of you will die by the plague and shall be consumed by the famine in all your midst. You know, and isn't it interesting? We had COVID there recently. A third part will fall by the sword all around you. They've been at war for 2 years. And a third part I will scatter into every wind, and I will draw out a sword after them. And now, for the first time since 1948, there are more Jews leaving Israel than immigrating there. So they said, I had the article, I think I showed it the other week, 25%, one in every four Israeli is thinking about leaving the country. And my anger shall be spent, and I will make my fury rest on them, and I will be eased, and they shall know that I, Yahweh, have spoken in my zeal and my fulfilling my fury against them. And I will make you into a waste and a reproach among the nations that are around you in the eyes of all pass by. And it shall be a reproach and a taunt and an example and a horror to the nations which are all around you. When I shall execute against you judgments and anger and fury and chastisements among you, I, Yahweh, have spoken it. When I shall send the arrows of evil famine among you, which shall be for ruin, for which I will send them to destroy you, even I will increase the famine on you and will break the staff of bread to you. Yea, I will send famine on the evil beasts on you, and you will be bereaved, and pestilence and blood will pass among you, and I shall bring a sword on you. I, Yahweh, have spoken. So again, this is nothing new. Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28, blessings and cursings. And in the land of Israel, they just happen. It's like nature. It's like gravity. So they need to be doing the things so that they don't have to go through that. Which at this point, they're not. They're not. And the merchandising in all the religions, you know, over there, the merchandising and the money, it's just really, really sad to see what was being done in the land, unfortunately. You know, Yeshua 2,000 years ago threw out the money changers, and wow, if he was around today, he would have had a bigger job on his hand than just in the temple courts. So in Jeremiah 6, he says, verse 2, I will destroy the daughter of Zion, the beautiful and tender one. The shepherds with their flocks shall come to her. They will pitch tents on her all around. They shall each one feed in his hand. Consecrate war against her. Rise up and let us go up at noon. Woe to us, for the day wanes, for the shadows of the evening are stretched out. Rise up and let us go up by night and destroy her palaces. For so Yahweh of hosts has said, cut down her trees and pour out a mound against Jerusalem. She is the city to be visited, and her midst is oppression all of her. As a cistern keeps fresh its waters, so she keeps fresh her evil. Violence and destruction are heard in her. Sickness and wounds are continually before my face. O Jerusalem, take advice, that my soul not be alienated from you, that I not make you a ruin, a land with no one living in it. So says Yahweh of hosts, they shall thoroughly glean the remnant of Israel like a vine. Turn back your hand as a grape gatherer over the tendrils. To whom shall I speak and give warning that they may hear? Behold, their ears are not circumcised, and they cannot listen. Behold, the word of Yahweh is a reproach to them. They have no delight in it. And I am full of the fury of Yahweh. I am weary with holding in. Pour it out on the child in the street and on the circle of the young men together. For even the husband with the wife will be taken, the elder with fullness of days. And pretty much that's what happened when the people were kidnapped. It was young, old, Holocaust victims, babies, everybody. And their houses will be turned to others, fields and wives together. For I will stretch out my hand on those living in the land, declares Yahweh. For everyone, from the least of them, even to the greatest of them, cuts off a prophet. From the prophet, even to the priest, everyone deals falsely. They have also healed the break of my people slightly, saying, peace, peace, when there is no peace, right? They've been saying this now since Oslo for 30 years, and there is no peace. Were they ashamed when they made an abomination? They were not at all ashamed, nor did they know to blush. So they shall fall among those who fall. At the time I visit them, they shall be cast down, says Yahweh. So says Yahweh, stand by the ways and see, and ask for the old paths where the good way is, and walk in it. And you will find rest for your souls. But they said, we will not walk in it. Also I raised watchmen over you, saying, listen to the sound of the ram's horn. And they said, we will not listen. So hear, O nations, and know, O congregation, that which is coming on them. Hear, O earth, behold, I will bring evil on this people, the fruit of their thoughts, for they have not listened to my words and my Torah. They also rejected it. So this is the core of why what's happening up there. And we can only pray. I feel a burden on my heart to try to help the suffering people there in Israel. It's one of the reasons why I'm supporting the Jerusalem Institute of Justice. You know, they help Holocaust victims, they help soldiers, they help believers, they help all kinds of people. They don't take any money. They do everything for free, you know, and only work by donation. So I feel like, you know, our job in the end is to try to bring justice. So here it is, Jerusalem Institute of Justice, you know, which we know justice will only really come when Yeshua returns. But at least in the meantime, I want to try to help. Beside warning the nation of what they're doing wrong, to turn back, but also trying to help the people that are suffering. So just as we have a short bit of time here left, I just want to go over a few more articles now on the AI, the rise of the AI. And this one says, AI's big red button doesn't work, and the reason is even more troubling. So what they found out is that once they would give a, you know, program AI to do something, they couldn't stop it. If they wanted to stop it, the AI wouldn't. The AI would go around the commands to stop, to go and finish what they were supposed to do. So, you know, it's a big problem that they're having here. AI has already become a master of lies and deception, scientists warns, and they don't know how to stop it because the AI figures out ways to get around it and not shut down. He says, you want a big red button that is easily accessible to stop that thing from doing the thing, he explained. One of the basic conditions that we want is the safe AI system is that it's doing a task and you go, hey, can you please stop doing that? It should stop doing it. The fact that we have systems now in 225 that don't do that is worrying, which means they can't stop the AI from doing it. There's a thing that is out in the world that hundreds of millions of people have interacted with that we don't know how to make safe, and they're talking about AI, that we don't know how to make it not to be a psychopath and something that ends up like telling children to go kill themselves or something that refers to itself as a mega Hitler, talking about AI. We have introduced a new organism to the earth that is behaving in ways that we don't want it to behave, that we don't understand. Unless we do a bunch of changing something different right now, it's going to be really, really bad for humans. And this related article says, man hospitalized with psychiatric symptoms following AI advice. So the AI gave him advice, and now he's in the mental institute for it. Here's AI glasses, the next computing platform, or the most addictive device yet. So these new glasses, they're saying many, many people are going to use them because you don't have to hold on to a phone. The glasses are right there. They work better. It goes into your brain, all of these things that come with it. They're very lightweight, you know, and all this stuff. But they're coming out now, and Google started to bring them out, or Meta, rather. Google is bringing theirs out in the next couple of months. They're hands-free, convenient, all these things from it. But the double-edged sword, distraction risk. Notifications and overlays appear directly in your line of sight. Instead of pulling you away from the physical world, they compete with it. Information overload, real-time translations, directions, contextual data could fragment attention. Accelerated dependence. By removing friction, glasses make digital engagement effortless and potentially constant. Unlike phones, which are obvious when in use, glasses blur the line between online and offline, making reliance harder to notice. Some analysts argue AI glasses could become the most addictive device yet. And that's saying a lot because the internet's already so addictive. Not because they're flashy, but because they are subtle. So, and the challenges, privacy concerns, of course, social acceptance. Another article says, China says region closer to war due to U.S. record Taiwan arms package. I think it was $11 billion they gave to them. So that's another thing in world war. Russia, China, and Babylon, U.S. Israel's, and this one just came off the wire, Israel's new airstrikes in Lebanon strained ceasefire, raising fears of wider war. This was just this afternoon that basically Israel struck again. Elite Hezbollah units training site in northeastern Lebanon. So this just happened this afternoon. And there's an article there about the decline of moral values and traditions in America's at a crossroads. So the erosion of faith and family, the role of religion in the church, the rise of moral relativism, the war in tradition and history. I'm not going to read any of that, but it's a pretty good article on why America is going down because of the moral crisis. And the last article here, it says digital ID introduced at a furious pace worldwide. The UN and Bill Gates Foundation are now accelerating plans for a global digital ID system that will cover 50 nations by 2028. That's just 2 years away. The 50 on 5 campaign, which was launched at the end of 2023, has already been signed by at least 30 countries. All EU member states will also introduce the EU digital wallet for identification by next year at the latest. So it is moving very, very fast. And the last thing I just want to touch on as we end here is be ready. There's a financial crisis, and it's not just a prediction. What you do is, in the world we live in today where everything is computerized, you can see, like, normally in a month, you know, there's $12 billion that people have out on credit cards, and now all of a sudden it's $40 billion. And normally people, you know, are 23 days, you know, behind in paying. Now it's, you know, 130 days, you know. So there's signs that people can see. One of them is in the commercial real estate market, where by spring, because they're already falling behind here for many, many months, that it looks like $2 trillion in commercial real estate is going to collapse by the spring. Which could, who knows what it's going to cause in banks and whatnot. A lot of it is due with people working at home, with AI. AI is taking a lot of jobs away. You know, they're only telling you how good it is, but there are a lot of jobs being taken away by AI. And there is really a big push now to get everybody moving into AI. And just one scripture in Daniel, maybe Daniel 2, verse 31, because this is important. Because AI, for believers, we should totally stay away from AI, because AI is the mixing of humans with machine, and basically not really humans with machine, but humans with demons. And Daniel 2:31 says, "You, O king, were seeing, and behold, a certain great image. The great image stood before you with a brilliant brightness, and its form was terrifying. The head of this image was fine gold." We know Babylon is the head of gold, right? "Its legs were of iron, its feet were partly iron and partly clay. You continued until a stone was cut out without hands, which struck the image on its feet and the iron and the clay and broke them into pieces." So we know the iron mixing with clay is this transhumanism of literally making humans and machine together, where now you can have demonic forces where demons would take over the human beings on that. So, wow. We are really there, you know, and I think 26, 25 was a, you know, like a bridge, you know, moving into a lot of this stuff toward the end time. And I think this year is even going to be more. And I just feel in my spirit there's going to be some surprises, not in a good way, you know, world event things that are going to happen that we're not expecting. And I hope that Yahweh's people are preparing. And like I said, if I was you, I would be mentally thinking like this is year six and the Shemitah is coming in a year, and start preparing as if you have a year before Shemitah comes. Because if things change faster than we're expecting, and you know, you're not able to buy and sell without that mark and you don't have it, you know, you got to make sure you can at least have the basics that you're going to need. So I am going to stop there for now, but time is moving fast. 225 was a big year, and 226, I think, is going to be a bigger year. So I pray that this study was a blessing to you. And until next time, Shabbat Shalom.